You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's a similar story. The last 2 years, we've broken records.
Ryan LeGrand is CEO of the U.S. Grains and Bioproducts Council.
Last 2 years, again, we broke a record. We broke the 2 billion gallon mark for the first time in history for ethanol exports. And this year, we now find ourselves 13% ahead of that pace compared to the same period last year. So currently, and if things hold, on pace for 2.4 billion gallons of exports of ethanol.
Now, the EIA, that's the Energy Information Administration, says U.S. ethanol production moved slightly higher last week, even as gasoline demand and exports eased. Output up 0.8%, equal to 42.71 million gallons per day. Now, slightly below the same week last year, but 3.4% above the five-year average. Longer-term pace, though, weaker. Four-week average ethanol production rate slipped 2.2%. That's equal to an annualized 16.09 billion gallons. Well, coal cow prices continue to grind higher as lean beef demand keeps supporting the market. Dr. David Anderson with Texas A&M AgriLife Extension says Southern Plains coal cow auction prices climbed to nearly $180 per hundredweight in late April. That's up about 15% or $15 since January. Cutter cows gaining roughly $30 or almost 25% since the start of the year. He says one underappreciated support factor is the unusually heavy carcasses of fed cattle. Average federally inspected fed steer dress weights have stayed above 980 pounds since late last year. It creates more fat trim and increases the need for lean beef and ground beef blends. Cow slaughter trends also helping. Dairy cow culling, which ran above year-ago levels in early 2026, pulled back to about year-ago levels in April. Total cow slaughter for the year reported down 5% from last year, even though dairy cow slaughter remains up about 6%. But record calf prices likely keeping more cows on ranches and dairies for one more calf. Anderson says that should continue to support prices, even if some culling increases after calves are weaned. USDA's Risk Management Agency changing the rainfall data source used in several federal crop insurance programs. It's a move officials say will improve transparency, access, and payment speed without changing how coverage works. Now, RMA shifting from NOAA's Climate Prediction Center data to the National Centers for Environmental Information. Transition begins immediately for the tropical storm option under the Hurricane Insurance Protection Wind Index program. It is set to expand to pasture, rangeland, forage, apiculture, and shellfish on August 31st, and then annual forage following April 30th of next year. Pat Swanson, administrator of the Risk Management Agency, said producers and agents will be able to look up rainfall data themselves in formats they can actually use, whereas the current system relies on more technical data that often requires special software. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
A big transition's coming, right?
Mike Castle is a senior economist with StoneX. Talks about an aging population.
You referenced, you know, nearly 60 years old. As of USDA's last census of ag in 2022, the average age of a farmer in the U.S. was 58.1, and over 40% of farmers are 65 or older. So I'm guessing their next round in 2027 will show that rising even further, which again kind of highlights this problem. And, you know, from a big picture perspective, change is hard for everyone. I don't want to generalize here, but it's especially hard for the older generations because they've been doing things a certain way for a long time, decades in this case. And, you know, the U.S. ag industry obviously is looking at a period of rapid change, which presents challenges, but also opportunities for those willing to adapt. And I'm sure, anyone involved in the ag sector, you know, hears me say that and, you know, is just shocked by the fact that farmers may be kind of set in their ways. But, you know, from a productivity standpoint, despite the aging demographics, we've continued to see a boom in productivity in the U.S., with a lot of that being driven by technology, whether that's genetics of the plant themselves or the equipment used to produce it. So we reached new record corn yields in each of the last 2 years, with last year's 186.5 marking a 4% jump from the record the year prior. That's up 6% from the record last decade. So if you just look at this trend over time, you continue to see this increase in efficiency. So even though we're seeing, you know, this aging demographic, seeing this reduction in operations, we're still seeing production rise. And the improvement in technology isn't just increasing efficiency. It's also helping those aging farmers farm for longer, which obviously just prolongs this problem that we're kind of talking about here today.
Is the change demographic generational or something else? Castle explains.
So this is a great question, and this is where I, you know, personally kind of take issue with the way this has been framed in a lot of the coverage. Obviously, there are legitimate demographic components, but I think the most common headline is something along the lines of kids these days don't want to work. And I don't think that really captures reality, right? Who wouldn't want a career where you can be your own boss, set your own schedule? To be fair, Mother Nature kind of dictates that in a lot of cases, but you can work outside, help feed the world. I mean, it's very hard work, but it's very meaningful work. And it's work that I think a lot of young people would like to take part in, but the barriers to entry are massive. If you don't inherit the land and the equipment, it's nearly impossible to get in from a pure capital requirement perspective. It's very, very capital intensive to get in. And again, just my own personal experience is a prime example of this. So three generations before my dad farmed full time, my dad farmed part time with my grandpa. And once that transition happened and the farm got split up between his siblings, simply is not enough land left over, right? So even if you inherit a couple hundred acres, if you don't also inherit the equipment or, you know, vice versa, you inherit the equipment, but not the land, you're looking at potentially millions of dollars of debt just to get in. So I'm not saying it's impossible, right? There, you can take on this debt and try to rent or custom farm as much as you can. It's very hard, right? You're working harder for much tighter margins. And, you know, there are people doing it, and hats off to them. That's, you know, extremely commendable. But a lot of folks are just incentivized to go find a job off the farm instead. Again, that's, you know, why I'm here chatting with you today. So throw in a year like this where margins are thin or negative, and it becomes even harder, right? Your competition is primarily farmers who, again, like we mentioned in the beginning here, have been doing this for decades and have enormous equity built up in their operations that allows them to pay higher rates for rented ground or pay more for the land itself, the equipment itself, which just kind of puts you behind the eight ball, so to speak.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Agriculture Today.
The effects and the impact of climate change are real.
Interesting exchange between Connecticut Representative Rosa DeLauro and the administrator of the EPA, Lee Zeldin, in an appropriation subcommittee hearing.
You probably did see the report on Antarctica and the glaciers and melting and all this. It was an extraordinary documentary over this past weekend. This is an administration that is hell-bent, in my view, on ignoring science. Just 2 weeks ago, you reportedly attended a climate deniers conference. And in your remarks, you said, quote, "For those who wanted to criticize my appearance here before this group, it really shows the desperation of just how many walls have collapsed of this last line of defense," end quote. In Connecticut, we have seen increasing heat waves, extreme precipitation, devastating floods, impacting everything, farming, school closures, damaging homes and businesses. Climate change is harming our health and our environment, but is also harming Americans financially. This administration, however, is running the playbook on making the problem worse, focusing on policies that are handouts to the fossil fuel companies, like reversing the 2009 greenhouse gas endangerment finding, rolling back fuel emission standards for motor vehicles, and reducing methane leak monitoring requirements. The budget proposal reads like a climate change deniers manifesto. When climate change is flooding our streets, poisoning our air, driving up health care and disaster costs, how can the EPA justify abandoning that duty to protect Americans to appease polluters under the false flag of economic growth?
Following the law, Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, where does it say anything about fighting global climate change? Loper Bright, Supreme Court case. You familiar with it?
No, I maybe others are. I'm not, but let me ask.
But that's really important. As a member of Congress, Loper Bright says that we as an agency don't have the authority to get creative. If Section 202 of the Clean Air Act.
No, but you don't have, excuse me, you do not have the right to say climate change does not exist, that it's a hoax, and that's where this administration is coming from.
I understand you're upset that you don't know what Loper Bright is. Do you know what the major policies doctrine is?
I'm upset because.
You know what the major policies doctrine is?
You know what, let me just.
You're a member of Congress. You should know.
Well, you have moved from someone who defended the environment to all of a sudden
being very defensive about not knowing the two biggest landmark Supreme Court cases of the last year with regards to your question.
You are very defensive about changing your policy and your positions with regard to the environment.
Okay.
Now, you just tell
me. You want
me
to tell you what the two biggest Supreme Court cases are of the last few years?
This is what I want you
to
tell me.
Michigan versus EPA.
Whoa.
West Virginia versus EPA.
You know, you're here because you need money from us. So halt for the second. And wait for the questions and answer the questions.
Well, I answered your question.
No, you didn't.
And you didn't like my answer because you don't know what Loper Bright is, because you don't know what the major policies doctrine is.
Chairman,
because you're asking me
questions.
You're asking me about Section 202 of the Clean Air Act, and you don't read it. You don't know what it says.
Listen, and what you want to do is to deny.
I actually read the law. I do my homework.
Really?
You're just somebody who likes to have the microphone on. You know what I have to do? I read the law.
No,
I read
Chairman,
the Supreme Court cases.
I don't have to listen to this, and I would say
no. What you should do for your constituents is actually read statute.
This budget is at real risk.
Read
Let
your Supreme
you.
Court.
This is the Appropriations Committee.
Oh, you
come
you're
here.
You care about
you
science. Now you're threatening to defund it.
Oh my God! No, you don't fund
because
science.
You don't know what Loper Bright is. Because
deniers.
You don't know what the major policies
you
doctrine
are
is. Your message
deniers.
To our folks at the EPA is that you want to defund us.
I don't have to listen to this BS.
The BS. You think I made up these cases?
Yeah, I think you have made up a whole
I made up Loper Bright. I made up West Virginia versus EPA. I made up Michigan versus EPA.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
But overall, still a lot of volatility. There's still a lot of uncertainty of how the winter wheat crop's going to turn out here in Oklahoma.
Todd Hubbs is an Oklahoma State Extension crop marketing specialist.
Here in Oklahoma, I think if you took an I-35 and took a line north on it, all the way up through Nebraska, you're seeing real problems to the west of that line, and it's very, very spotty. Sometimes you'll see some wheat fields that look pretty decent, but you know, when you talk to folks that have gotten out in them, there's issues. So in general, even though we've seen some weather move through, it's more of the eastern part of Oklahoma and Kansas and Nebraska that's benefited from it, and a lot of our hard red winter wheat area is struggling. And that's why we're seeing this, you know, the wheat's maturing quickly, and that's going to lead to smaller seed heads and, you know, just general problems with yield across the board. So I think you're going to see prices reflect these problems. They've already started happening in the market. I don't think it's going to spill over too much into, like, into corn or soybeans. They've got their own things going on, in particular the way their crops are developing, how many acres they're going to have this year. And those might put a damper on how high hard red winter wheat prices can go, how high they can go. The soft red winter wheat area, because it's in that Ohio River Valley, is in a little bit better condition. Most of the trouble for the winter wheat crop is here with us.
Texas AgriLife Extension Grain Marketing Specialist, Mark Welch.
That first report, you know, the share of crop that was in the very poor and poor categories was significantly higher in April than it was back in November. And those condition ratings have just continued to fall as we've gone now through the first, you know, 3 or 4 weeks of those reports. So there's some significant concern of the yield potential of the 2026 U.S. wheat crop. And then combine that with, you know, the information that came from the prospective plantings report back at the end of March, that U.S. wheat acres were, according to the farmer survey, were only going to total 43 million in 2026. And that would be an all-time record low. USDA began reporting that all wheat acreage number back in 1919. And we've never seen a number as low as 43 million. That's about half the wheat we were planting you know, back in, say, 1980. So we'd lower acres, and then, you know, just week to week, seeing those crop condition ratings deteriorate, there's certainly some real concern on the supply side. From what we're seeing globally right now, however, you know, the indicators that I have access to and watching don't show a large portion of the global wheat crop for 2026, you know, in trouble right now. So I think then you look at, well, what else then maybe going on, you know, driving that price of wheat? You know, certainly just the turmoil coming out of the Middle East and the escalation of prices across many commodities. I think, you know, wheat may be caught up in that. And are we beginning to see reflected in these markets perhaps some concern of what higher fertilizer prices might do to production prospects further down the road? As we look at, you know, those countries that do rely very heavily on fertilizer imports, might we start to see some yield implications from these high fertilizer prices, or where fertilizer is even available at all, you know, if you're heavily reliant on imported product. So is that playing into that? I think there's just so much uncertainty right now, and then around a food grain, you know, like wheat, I think it gets a lot of market attention. So there's some fundamental explanation.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Pure demographic story obviously exists everywhere, just with the aging population. The Census Bureau has some really good graphics showing county level population changes, which, you know, if you haven't seen it, might encourage you to go look. But it basically shows this dramatic shift in the U.S. from rural areas into urban and suburban areas. I think something like 80% of the U.S. now lives in, you know, something considered an urban area. That's up from, I think, you know, 100 years ago, it was like 50% or less.
Mike Castle is with StoneX.
You know, to give you a personal example, again, if you go find that map, go look at county level population changes. Saline County in the middle of Missouri, where I'm from, is one of them where you've seen population decline in the last decade. And the two counties east of us, which would be the Columbia Metro, two counties west of us, which would be the Kansas City Metro, saw increases. And, you know, I'm part of that, right? You know, I moved from one of these rural counties now to the KC area. So again, it's a prime example of what's kind of happened. So these already sparsely populated areas, you know, and, you know, Missouri, we're nothing. So I used to, you know, work at elevators, you know, as in southwest Nebraska, for example. There's just physically not people, right? There's not a ton of incentive to stick around, and you've seen these population declines. So that's another factor that leads to more consolidation, more need for technology to replace that, you know, non-existent labor. So you got fewer farms, you got larger farms, which, again, is also what USDA Census of Ag showed. And, you know, it's talking about the labor risks. You know, there are certainly places where, you know, people struggle again, just with non-existent populations. There's just not people to take the jobs. And if you're in a labor intensive practice, like if you're in the livestock sector, specialty crop sector, like your fruits and vegetables, your struggle may not just be labor costs that are rising, but also just physical labor availability. There's just not enough people around to do the job. So, obviously, it's kind of a hot button topic, but the reality is immigration policy plays a role in this too, right? This is a lot of the employees. So again, if you're in a year of already tight margins and your labor costs are going up too, going up considerably, you know, all of a sudden they look even tighter. Not everything can be automated or replaced with a machine. You're seeing as much of that, I think, as the industry allows, right? Obviously, we're in a very technological age here, but the reality is not everyone can be. You still need that labor force. You still need those people, right?
This leads to continued consolidation.
I think you continue to see an acceleration of consolidation in the ag industry like we've seen. You know, I think total farm operations in the U.S. are down like 20% over the last 20 years, and that trend likely continues. I think technology and automation continue to play a bigger role as well. I'm sure you guys have seen the videos of fully autonomous equipment, robotics, all this stuff entering the ag space. And this is a big part of why, despite these declines in the number of operations, our production is still going up, right? Again, going back to corn, we just broke the 17 billion bushel mark for the first time ever last year, even with fewer farms out there. We're simply becoming more efficient as the industry kind of adapts to these changes. But I also think, you know, kind of just talking about farmland in general, you see more crop ground being rented instead of owned moving forward as that kind of transition happens. You know, as folks retire but don't want to sell, I think ownership gets more concentrated even if the person operating the land changes. And, you know, this obviously comes with the secondary effect of, you know, having negative impacts on rural America, which, you know, obviously as someone from a rural area that's pretty ag dependent, it's sad to see, right? You know, seeing population decline and the stuff that goes with it. But there are, you know, millions of people out there fighting to keep that going, and I encourage them to do so. I think it's a very, you know, good thing for the country. But, you know, we're, again, in this very rapid period of change, and I don't think it slows down anytime soon here.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
The Department of Commerce continues to work around the clock to implement President Trump's America First trade policy.
Testifying before a House subcommittee on appropriations, Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick.
Under Section 232, the Commerce Department is taking action on steel, aluminum, copper, pharmaceuticals, autos, semiconductors, and investigating other sectors to protect, reshore, and revive manufacturing. These actions have led to multi-billion dollar commitments to reshore steel and aluminum manufacturing and restore American excellence in critical industries. In the first year of his second term, President Trump has dramatically reduced the trade deficit, lowering imports and increasing exports. Exports went to $3.4 trillion, which is a 6% increase from 2024. And in 2025, the trade deficit was the lowest we've seen in 16 years. I'm proud of the role I played in negotiating our most important trade agreement, including the largest deal ever done, which was our trade deal and investment deal with the European Union. BIS is working hand in hand with the Department of Health and Human Services. We've arranged historic agreements to lower drug prices for American consumers, negotiating most favored nation deals, and ensuring Americans pay the lowest prices for innovative medicines. As a result of these deals, additionally, we have secured over $400 billion in commitments to reshore pharmaceuticals and manufacturing in America, those key pharmaceuticals. The budget includes a $215 million increase to BIS above the 2026 enacted level, which supports the hiring of hundreds of new special agent law enforcement officials to address the theft of American technological leadership by bad actors. These officers are critical to protecting and defending America's innovation. In ITA, we are driving record foreign direct investment, cracking down on harmful foreign trade practices, and supporting our 1.3 million American jobs with export and investment deals. In 2025, ITA helped Boeing, Wabtec, and other major American companies secure a record $244 billion in contracts with foreign public buyers. This exceeds the $17 billion that the Biden administration did in its first year. The budget includes a $10 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for trade enforcement in ITA and $100 million for the United States Investment Accelerator. The budget slashes unnecessary wasteful spending at NIST and other groups and eliminates the manufacturing extension partnership, which I'm sure we will talk about. At the USPTO, we are rapidly modernizing and leveraging technology to cut classification prep dramatically. We want to get rid of the massive backlog that we had and do a much better job. And finally, we have launched a new era of modernization of NOAA, where we're in the process of transferring the agency's IT system from a decades-old hardwired technology to the modern distributed cloud. This update will improve our forecasting capabilities, transform the way our forecasters do their jobs, and will make Americans safer. The budget also includes a $135 million increase to the 2026 enacted level for NOAA shipbuilding and our improvement of unmanned systems programs. For far too long, our nation was mired in status quo, leaving American consumers and producers alike with unfair, poorly implemented trade deals, outsourced jobs, and paltry investments that failed to meet our country's potential. President Trump is committed to ushering in a golden age of domestic commerce and bringing jobs back to the United States, and that's exactly what he's done in his first 15 months of this administration. I look forward to working with you as the department continues to spur economic growth and secure unprecedented prosperity for the American people.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.